Hello.
Man. What's up, everyone?
Long time coming.
It's been a very long time. Almost as long as it took for the movie that we're going to talk about to come out.
Right.
Forever. Or at least it felt like to me.
Yeah, same. From the ashes we rise, right? Can we say that?
Phoenix. I don't know. I don't know. What are you talking about?
I felt like I had to say something like that,
you
right?
Did, yeah, you usually feel like that. You get really nervous and right. You have to say things like that.
This is the Tupac hologram. We have come back in some form to tell you guys that we are back forever. So it's obvious we've been having some problems.
We've been having some major problems. Wait, first off, let's welcome everyone to Movie Schmovie.
Hello. Welcome
to You're very Movie. Good at not ever saying our name. That's fine.
I think that's like a movie. It just kicks into the action, right?
Oh,
and
okay. Then this is like that 15 minutes before it starts.
And they show, boom.
Am I in the right movie? And title. Then you're like, oh, yeah, I am.
It tricked you.
Okay. Got it.
Volume 38.
39.
39?
39.
What?
38 was our nemesis. That was the one that caused the one that problems. Was... If you haven't been following us, we had a little bit of an issue with how we host our podcast.
Right.
It's been You'd troublesome. Think that we'd have our shit together, but, you know, no, we will.
It's not our fault. That's not
no,
our
it
fault.
Is our fault. Really? We had plenty of time, I think.
We had just dropped the ball. It didn't matter. They were basically saying it didn't matter.
Okay, well, regardless, if you subscribe to our podcast, you should really follow these instructions. Unsubscribe from it,
right?
As it is now in your iTunes or whatever it is.
Unsubscribe.
Unsubscribe and resubscribe.
Yeah.
Hopefully, if you're listening to this version of the podcast, you've already done that because right. It's probably the only way you would be able to listen to this through iTunes.
Probably
so
Mixcloud.
So kudos to you.
Could be Mixcloud too.
Well, that's why I said if you're listening to it in iTunes.
I see what you
little
did there.
Thing there.
I see what you did there. I see what you did there. So.
Yeah, so if you're in iTunes, unfortunately, we had to resubmit it and kind of get everything lined back up. It's a little cleaner now, so hopefully this never happens again.
No, it won't.
But if you do subscribe, though, I will. We both really, really plead to you to rate it, comment on it, suggest it back to your friends. Because unfortunately, we lost a lot of our subscribers, lost a lot of our comments and ratings. So, you know, when people search for movie podcasts, we don't kind of hit the search results as high as we used to. Not that we were anywhere near the top to begin with, but
still,
we were inching our way there, and now we're back at the bottom.
But from the ashes we rise.
See, now there.
See?
That was that's where it comes full right circle. There. I like that.
And we will come back. Just please rate it after you subscribe because we had a lot of good
It helps
comments.
A lot. It helps a lot.
Yeah.
Well, either way, we're back out there. And we still have the site up, and the site's running strong, and the movieschmovie.net. So you can always follow that site. We'll always post the podcast there.
Yeah.
You know, so worst case scenario, if you're having trouble with iTunes or Mixcloud or any place that we are, always movieschmovie.net. You can listen to the podcast right through the website and also read reviews and news from, you know, some of the titles that we don't have time for in the actual podcast.
We write. Did you know that? We write.
I'm aware of that, but most
they're
of
not aware
probably,
of that.
Yeah. Well, if you've been to the site, you should know that.
We write.
But movieschmovie.net. And we also have the movieschmovie at Gmail, the Twitter account at movieschmovie, and the facebook.com/movieschmovie. So there's a lot of different ways to reach out to us, but I would suggest the movieschmovie.net. Because you can kind of get everywhere from there.
Right.
You know, it's kind of like the base station for us.
Okay, so...
I was going to make a reference to the movie that we're about to talk about, but I didn't want to, like,
right.
ruin it.
So, here's the deal. We're going to review an epic movie. So, he and I couldn't handle this by ourselves. We're weak. We would just babble on and start crying because I get really emotional when I talk about the
end. I brought the tissues with me
right.
just in case it
so
happens.
So, we needed a little assistance. So we brought our friend, John Walker.
Hey, fellas.
Hey, John.
Thank you, John. Hello.
Happy to be here.
Okay, so he's going to be our resident expert, because we're all experts, right? Can we agree on that?
I don't know. In our own respect.
I mean,
the three of us make up one expert.
Yeah.
Right. I mean this in the most respectful way possible. We're smarter than you listeners. And we're just lending our knowledge to you. Just here, just take a little bit of that. And John's going to help us. So the movie that we're going to review is Dark Knight Rises. The end of a trilogy. The end of...
A legend.
Yeah.
As they say.
It marked the beginning of a very different genre of comic book movie. Where, you know, comic book movies were kind of corny up until this point. And Christopher Nolan changed the game. He kind of made it so that, you know, within the realm of realism in that world, you could imagine Batman functioning in a way that wasn't corny. I mean, because obviously Batman and Robin didn't do it for us.
But they went a little down the other path.
Right.
I still think that even with these movies, the moment at which the guy in the sculpted muscle suit comes in and goes, hey, Commissioner Gordon. That was always still kind of silly.
Right. Yeah.
They did everything they could not to make it seem silly.
Right.
But those moments were still, it was always like there's a nice crime drama going on.
Exactly.
It's almost like I'm watching The Wire.
Even though
and then
silly
Commissioner Gordon.
And you know what?
A pro wrestler in a costume just came in.
I've come to accept his silly voice.
But in the third one, I did too. Like,
right.
I finally came to terms with it. I was like, you know, I'd have to come up with a voice too. If I was a superhero and I was trying to protect the people I loved, I'd have to have a voice.
Yeah.
Silly question. The first and second one, was Commissioner Gordon like high, or did he not pick up on the fact that he had the same facial structure as a well-known man in the
That's any superhero, especially the Batman.
How did he not pick up on that at some point?
It's a classic blind spot.
Yeah.
That's the one thing he couldn't imagine.
He's like,
oh, it changed his voice.
Couldn't be him. It was very
Joseph Gordon-Levitt figured it out when he was a kid.
I mean, Gordon, he's like, that's definitely Batman.
Yeah.
Clearly Batman. So that was interesting. So I guess a little backstory. The villain in this movie is Bane. Bane is a lesser known a villain in the Batman world, I guess, especially if you're just following the movies.
If you're old like me, you stopped reading comic books before Bane came along. So to me, Bane was strange.
Strange guy. I guess he kind of came along in 1993 in the newer comics. He kind of came along as pretty much the person that was going to end Batman. And I mean, I guess we kind of figure out that he shakes up his world in this movie, and as we talk about that, start off with that. So the tone of this movie.
So did either of you guys read the comics?
We were talking a little bit about it before we started. I mean, I'm aware of the comics that he kind of got introduced in, the whole Nightfall series.
Mm-hmm.
Doing more research for the movie, I learned a lot more about it. Trying to find the issues myself or the actual editions, I was unsuccessful, but I mean, my understanding, and even when I first heard about Bane being the villain, I tried to picture it and place it in that he was Batman's physical and, you know, mental match, you know, mm-hmm. like in terms of his planning and in terms of his physical prowess and his physical skills. I mean, it seemed like, okay, that's the justification for having a villain of this level in the culmination of this new trilogy.
Right.
You know, where, you know, Ra's al Ghul or Scarecrow or Joker or, you know, anybody that was involved in the prior films, they had that niche where, you know, that's what they were greatest at.
Right.
You know, the chaos of the Joker or, you know, the master planning of Ra's al Ghul or some of those things.
Mm-hmm.
I feel like Bane has a little bit of a mix of it all. I mean, you know, and reading more about him, I mean, you know, from what we talked about, that seems to be the reason for the choice. I mean, as we watch this film and you see more of the film, you see that there's other reasons why, you know, that villain was chosen. But I mean, I'm not too versed in the comics, admittedly, you know. I read them as a kid more so and, you know, followed it more through like the animated series, you know, in the 90s and things like that. But I didn't jump for joy when Bane was announced.
Right. It almost seemed like, you know, if you're a nerd. and you cared about this, you probably heard rumors about you know, the Penguin or the Riddler or whatever.
Right.
And it was hard not to picture who are they going to get after Heath Ledger, who are they going to get to do this thing.
Yep.
So it almost seemed like Bane was kind of an outside choice.
Yeah.
It was. I remember like hearing things like Johnny Depp was going to play the Riddler or things like that. And I was like, oh, interesting. And then they throw
I guess
Bane
I'm supposed
there.
To think that sounds good.
Yeah.
That also sounds like it could be, you know, pretty,
horrible.
Pretty
horrific. It could be horrific.
Hard to watch.
I when I was a kid, I started reading comic books around 9 or 10. So the first comic book I decided to get on my own was this comic book. It's the strangest thing in the world. I love Batman. I saw the animated series and I read this comic book. I had no idea who Bane was. And then the first time I read about him, he breaks his back. I mean, and that devastated me as a kid. Like, I didn't know how to handle my favorite comic book character being destroyed.
Mm-hmm.
One thing that separates...
Well, you knew they wouldn't do it, but I guess that was a storyline. I mean, again, that was after I stopped reading comics, but that seems like that was a story that went on for a while. Like,
right, yeah, because he was like...
He spent some time
with
his back broken. He was...
He got replaced. Batman. That was another Batman, another iteration of Batman, kind of taking his place while he was healing and all that stuff. Bane thought he was dead. It got really crazy. But one of the things I remember, even in every iteration of Bane, even like the animated series, the comic books I'd read, was he was one of the most unrelenting. Is that relenting or unrelenting?
You want to say unrelenting.
Unrelenting. Yeah, he was almost one of the most unrelenting villains I had ever seen. Like, rather than Ra's al Ghul and Joker had like these master plans. I mean, Bane had one, but it was more about the physicality.
I was going to say, I think the main thing to me, and I still don't know quite what I think of the overall picture of the movie.
Right.
But I do think Bane was more interesting than I expected him to be. Because the idea that someone's going to match Batman, you know, he's not just brute force. He's also really smart. That's an interesting idea to have somebody who, like, by all rights, might be able to beat the shit out of Batman.
Yeah. I mean, the original version, he had venom coursing through his veins and he had a button that kind of stopped it. It was weird because...
Why didn't Batman just go for that mask first thing? Know. Why didn't he get his hands on that and just...
Right, just snatch it off? He couldn't. He tried, actually, when everything went down. He would intentionally try to reach for it and he wouldn't let him. He was such a brute force. Like,
that scene was tough to... I mean, it's like, again, certain things about the movie worked for me and certain things didn't, but that scene was... Yeah, kind of turned your stomach when it was like Batman was losing like pretty bad. Right. And it was like, oh, okay. I'm not sure. You know, my inner 10-year-old was kind of
Right. I guess we should try to like set the tone. When does this movie begin? When does it start? Like it's
I mean, basically we pick up 8 years after. Right.
So what did you guys think of that? Like to me, I guess you have to separate the movies from the books.
Right.
Completely. I mean, I don't even go into these things as a comic book fan most of the time. I try not to.
So do I.
And I don't have like this story that I think they should be telling. Mm-hmm. But I do think it's a little strange that in the world of the movies that Batman was Batman for about a year.
You're right.
And then he stopped for 8 years. And now it seems like a different they've had stories in the comics about Batman retiring, but I always thought, that was always after like 20 years or 30 years. What did you think of the fact that he, like, his parents getting killed was enough to make him want to fight crime dressed up as a bat.
Right.
But then his girlfriend getting killed was enough to make him say, oh, no, never mind.
Right. I think the whole idea was like he had basically.
And I guess maybe that's a spoiler. His girlfriend got killed in the last movie.
Right. Yeah.
But we find in the new movie that he's still having a tough time over that. And I guess he feels responsible and that's an added layer, but it just seemed like, I don't know. It seemed like Batman, the last 8 years are pretty vague in that movie. Like has he really been rattling around limping?
What's he been doing? I guess they don't even explain that really. I mean, I guess the whole idea is he kind of flatlined everything that was going on.
He grew a goatee.
Right. Like he was such a force in Gotham that he flatlined any organized crime. I mean, with the act passed by Two-Face, Harvey Dent, combined with everything that Batman had done, crime was at a minimum for a very long time.
I mean, I guess that's...
Yeah,
that
lie that they told him, I think that probably needs to be explained.
Yeah.
I mean, just the idea of Batman taking the fall for, Harvey / Two-Face's actions at the end of Dark Knight... is what allows, I mean, the 8 year piece I get in terms of the commitment and or just the way he deals with or is dealing with the loss of Rachel and, this commitment to the idea of, Harvey Dent was what Gotham needed and, to take the fall for what he did and to sacrifice him as this fallen idol almost. I think 8 years, I mean, you have to understand that's where Christopher Nolan's story or his brother's story comes into play and where it, kind of deviates from they take those pieces from other Batman series, like where you were saying, like he's much further into his career as Batman and he's gone for 10 years and he comes out of retirement when, Joker escapes from the asylum or in one of the series that this is based on. But it didn't really bother me that much, the whole 8 year thing. I mean, a lot of people were asking, friends that I'd seen it with were saying, well, just because Batman's gone, why is Bruce Wayne gone? Why is he such a recluse? Why is he never, when he goes out in public?
Do they know they're the same guy?
Yeah.
Right. Tell him Bruce Wayne is Batman.
Yeah, right?
Let him know.
It's just like, you try to, people I think expect those dots to be connected really easily. Like, oh, well, why, why? So 8 years and that first time he goes out to that dance, like that's the first time he's been out in 8 years and everybody's going crazy to get his picture.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that I can see having a little bit of an issue with, but the Batman piece, I didn't really think much about, what I mean? Because I saw it more of as a commitment to the deal, the idea that him and Gordon came up with to let Batman take the fall for it if it meant the better of the city.
Right.
You know, But I mean, I don't know. I guess Bruce is just really upset about Rachel dying.
Yeah, I mean, it makes sense. It makes sense.
Poor guy didn't know she wasn't going to wait for him. Too bad.
Oh, by the way, that was sad reveal. That's a bunch of really... Batman is in rough shape. I mean, Bruce Wayne is in rough shape. He's just suffering and still has these ideas about what happened with Rachel. And Alfred really tries to stand as a remotivator. He wants him to realize that you got to get out there and
but get out there something. As Bruce Wayne,
get out
not there, as Batman,
right? Because he saw even within that year or two that he was active that he was going through some things. Like his girlfriend got kidnapped, she got murdered, all these people around him were being hurt, you know what I mean? So it's a big sacrifice being Batman.
I mean, yeah, not to mention his physical, like him physically, he was broken.
You know?
Even to begin with in this film, he seemed it, you know.
Well, I thought it was kind of interesting that at the end of the last movie, they made it seem like it made sense that Alfred wouldn't show him that letter. I mean, again, to explain the letter that Rachel left him that indicated that she had chosen Harvey.
Yeah.
Yep.
And Bruce didn't know. Like, and his decisions were so, like, he did that to protect him. But we see in this movie that that lie has actually caused some damage. The same way we see that the lie that Gordon and Batman set up has caused some damage. You know, that it's so it's almost like they do a good job in the last movie of making you see how these decisions make sense. But then in this one, they almost walk back from that. And, okay, if it's not the truth, it's almost it's not going to be good. Ultimately,
that's a huge. That's amazing. That's a great point. I was thinking about that the whole way through the movie is that. You know, it's different scales, but Alfred's decision to hide that from Bruce for his better, you know, life.
Which was like almost like a kind decision at the time.
Yes, absolutely. And it's like, you know, you see the same result of it, you know, is that the best intention wasn't really realized because it didn't really play out of the way he thought it would. You know, it's much more devastating than he thought it would be. Just like the way that everything turns around in terms of, you know, Batman taking the fall for Two-Face and not letting Gotham know what really happened, you know, with this idol that they had that really wasn't or didn't really live up to what they had expected or hoped for him to. Right. I think maybe we want to kind of maybe hit on some other plot points to kind of see where the story is, you know, beyond 8 years later. You know, obviously we've hit on the idea that Bruce Wayne and Batman have been kind of MIA for that time.
Right.
You know, we pick up, I think, you know, you kind of get this little piece about, what was it? It's Selina. We meet Selina Kyle at a function at Wayne Manor. And that's I mentioned her because I think she's actually one of the coolest characters, in my opinion, in the film. I thought she was incredible. I mean, this is a character that we come to see as Catwoman.
They didn't call her Catwoman, which I thought was really cool.
But you definitely see it.
Right.
And I mean, like, there's pieces in the film, like when she's in her full outfit and she has the goggles on and she flips them up and they're like cat ears. I mean, it's very suggestive and it's...
Yeah.
You know, you pull that away from it, but I thought she was amazing. I love her to begin with. I think she's pretty effective in most things. That
well, it's kind of something that Christopher Nolan has done, though. Is like, if you leave your notion of what Catwoman is at the door, I think, she's an interesting character, and it's because she's a little bit of a wild element. You don't quite know what she's she's going to do,
and she's one of the pieces that you're wondering about. Like, you see the. The step to the right, the step to the left in terms of the good, the bad, and where she's kind of her motivations are. And you have some sense of idea of where some of the movie goes or where it's going or certain characters are going. But, you know, she's one of those wild cards in the movie, which I think is kind of cool, you know, because you can tell who's good and bad in this film for the most part, you know, pretty easily. And, you know, she kind of
who's blowing people up.
She makes you kind of. Kind of get to think about her a little bit.
Yeah.
But I think what you made a really good point, John, when you mentioned about like when you go into these films, you know, and that's why I say earlier on that I'm not a big comic book guy. Like I had my moment when I was a kid, but I didn't stick with it through, you know, my teenager adult years. So I go into all these superhero films, like all these comic book movies, and we've talked about a lot of them since this podcast has started. I mean, I go into a lot of these as just a moviegoer, you know, looking for a entertaining film, you know, based on characters that I may know something about, but not, you know, all there is to know or I have heard of, whatever, in pop culture.
Yeah.
You know, and I kind of have just experienced him for the world that he's created and the things that I'm aware of, you know, the whole, you know, with Catwoman and the little bit that I did know about Bane and, you know, the John Blake angle,
We know what you mean.
Cool things, you know, like I think, oh, you get that as a general moviegoer. I think that's where, you know, you kind of get
now,
that.
Is John Blake an actual character from the books, or is he just a similar character?
No, he's not. And
we should mention
who. I suppose we should talk about.
Yeah.
Are we going to talk about that yet? Or, like, I guess he is.
Go for it. Robin. I mean, we're talking about good and bad forces in the film. And, I mean, John Blake, we meet Joseph Gordon-Levitt plays.
Yeah.
He's a cop, young Gotham, you know, police officer.
Yeah. Ooh.
We meet very early. Who obviously has, you know, elements of him that. Just, you know, everything is positive. You know, everything is for the good. You know, he obviously has some questions and issues with the way the police force is structured and the rules that they follow and what their motivations are for following them at times.
Mm-hmm.
But, I mean, you obviously see that he's an ally of Batman's, of Commissioner Gordon, and of, you know, the good of Gotham.
Yeah. I mean, one of the bigger things that's going on, too, is during the 8 years... with the Organized Crime Act that passed, there are basically two sides that there reside. They're the good and the bad, the haves and the have-nots. And these people are basically being kind of oppressed in a way. The rich are getting richer and the poor are getting poorer. And there has to be some kind of shakeup. And that's essentially, Selina Kyle is one of those people that's kind of feeling that way about it. You can kind of see in some of the scenes that it's some, there's some tension there between the two elements, and Bane sets out to destroy the society as it stands, and he starts in a pretty convincing manner. The first thing you know what I meant to mention, the first scene, the first 10 minutes, the prologue that got shown a year ago that people were talking about. I really didn't get it the first time I saw it. And I still kind of am not sure exactly what he was doing in the beginning.
I will have to say it's one of those movies that it will disintegrate a little bit in your mind if you try to think too much.
Right.
Because there's a lot of coincidences and there's a lot of people just showing up out of the shadows
right when
they're needed and that kind of thing. But as far as that opening scene, until you mentioned it, I haven't gone back and tried to replay like what was happening there, you know, except for the fact that it was a cool stunt. And
I think
we all kind of felt like we were watching Christopher Nolan do his James Bond audition reel at that moment. Like that scene was such.
I didn't get it. Like the switching the blood and putting the blood in.
I think the blood thing was to make sure that the body that was found in the crash would have the blood type
exactly of
Pavel.
So they thought that he died in the crash.
That he didn't.
Yeah.
He,
it was just adding evidence to that. But it still seems like, well, the few
that
seconds
was,
that they did.
That
like
was very elaborate
to
do that. I feel like they could have just caught
but
him.
But I feel like there may have even been a line of dialogue that I missed. There were so many parts where I would hear about, I would be able to tell maybe two-thirds of what Bane was saying.
Right. That's the thing. Okay, so I saw the prologue.
A few months ago.
Yeah. Almost a year ago.
Yeah, a while ago.
So one of the interesting things, I saw it before the voice alteration and all that stuff.
Mm-hmm.
I could not understand anything.
Everyone was saying that.
Could not. It was hard.
So there were parts in this where I felt like they piped it in a little
they
too.
They put it a little too loud.
It felt like
loud.
It was not even part of the same scene.
It wasn't.
Yeah.
It was very, very loud. But I guess that was the whole thing with the mask kind of magnifying his voice. But it was very, very loud in comparison to all the sound in the entire movie.
Yeah.
So it was very strange at times.
They may have overcompensated.
I think so. But
because everyone was saying, and I remember just from the trailer, like I didn't see the extended scene, but I remember around that same time they made a trailer.
Yeah.
And it was the first footage anyone had seen. And yeah, it was definitely just like.
Yeah.
And then
when
the movie comes out.
Yeah, literally like it was like I remember it was before Mission Impossible 4, yeah. I think is when it came out. And like the next day, you see everything online. Like, what did Bane say?
Yeah.
You know, like, and it's like, will it be addressed for the final product?
Right.
You know,
will it be They were talking about subtitles.
Yeah.
They were talking about a lot of different things, like reshooting some parts. It just got crazy, and I think that he didn't want to do that, so he just kind of.
And who knows if it was supposed to be the final version before? But I guess
Sure. Exactly.
I think that's kind of what their stance was at the time.
Yeah.
Was that this was like not a finished, you know, product in terms of mixing or production.
Yeah.
I mean, I guess there were parts where it was like, you know.
It actually, I almost think it adds to the character in a weird way.
That's what I was
going
to say.
But the only thing that made it distracting to me was that so often he's just explaining his motivations.
Yeah.
And so occasionally I would miss something and I would think, oh, I hope I didn't miss anything too important, you know.
Yeah.
And it would kind of take me out of it for a second. But in general, I was able to kind of understand. I mean, also, like, I think it was he's doing a little bit of a funny voice. Almost. I mean, it's that sort of sing-songy kind of he's definitely doing a bit of a voice, and it reminds me of Heath Ledger as the Joker doing kind of a particular kind of voice, you know. And it was just, and then it makes you think of Batman doing his voice, and it sort of makes you think, okay, well, I guess in Gotham, you just gotta, you know,
you gotta have that crazy voice.
Yeah, everyone's gotta have a crazy voice.
It fit him too.
What do you think of the way he was done with in the end? Do you think that was the way Bane was killed?
Man,
did it feel a little anticlimactic? I thought that after setting him up to be this ultimate badass, it was a little bit of almost like just for a joke.
There was a weird thing about,
like, I didn't quite buy the shift of main villain
me either.
To her. And it's not because I don't necessarily buy the plot element. I just mean, I felt like nothing she did in that last 10 or 15 minutes matched what he had been, you know, I came around. I started off thinking, who's Bane? Why did they choose Bane? And then was like, okay, I can see why this is a pretty cool villain. And then it was almost like, well, he didn't really matter that much. He was a puppet. Right.
I felt like that at first, but what I think it was she.
Who was she?
She.
There's another.
Are we going to talk about?
Here we go.
Are we going to talk about who she is? Or
we need to pick one inconsequential detail that no one will care about and promise not to spoil that.
Okay. Yeah. Right.
Oh man. What would that be?
So, I don't know. Should we use her? Okay.
The character
Miranda.
Okay.
Okay. So she turned out to be.
You just don't want to say Marion Cotillard. You're just afraid to try it.
Right. I'm very not even bad at that. Right. I'm terrible at that. I'm not even going to try. Okay. So a couple big reveals. Her boobs. Can we talk about that for 1 second? 1 second. You can't tell me that you watched this movie, saw her, and thought, you didn't think, oh my goodness, what? You didn't notice that? Okay, I noticed.
I mean, I noticed that she had boobs. So I generally
They were massive for someone that small. The first thing.
Okay.
Second thing was it.
I love how that's the first thing.
Right.
That's the priorities. Let's keep it straight.
I think that
we all know most important thing, you got to get out of the way.
Right. You got to get out the fifth. Like, also, Selena Kyle's butt in the movie. Can we talk about the angle as she's riding
I think that. I always think Batman looks silly riding that bike, and seeing a woman, it's like when it forces you to stick your butt out, right. It almost seems like they only designed that bike that way,
one reason,
just so they could have these lingering shots.
Right.
At the end of Dark Knight Rises, we will have her ass in the air.
Strange. I guess the whole
thing. That's what the whole movie was leading up to.
That's the reveal.
That's the trilogy.
Damn, we spoiled that too.
Yeah, right.
God.
Selena Kyle has a round butt. I think that was the whole. But
all right, go ahead.
Miranda. So I didn't think that it was like one of those things where she was running things the whole time. I think that she did run things.
Yeah.
But I think that what happened was she kind of let him off the leash to do what he had to do to bring it into the bigger plan.
I guess I want to call them a puppet. That's a little extreme because it almost seemed like there was kind of a partnership going
on. Right.
Clearly. I just mean that like it was strange to be wondering like how is Batman going to beat Bane? And then when it doesn't even happen that way.
That was a bigger idea in this. Okay. So he wanted to destroy Gotham through nuclear warfare, blah, blah, blah.
Very patient, by the way. I set this bomb in about 5 months. It's going to go off.
That's one of the
cool things. Long view.
He really wanted Gotham to disintegrate. Like he wanted it from the inside out to implode, and then that was
he was waiting for everybody to basically turn on themselves,
right?
And then he would basically turn
it off completely.
Kind of similar to in Dark Knight, the Joker's thing with the two boats.
Yep.
I mean, it's a similar kind of thing where the goal is to see what people will do to each other.
I guess
the difference might be Joker was wrong and Bane was sort of proven right to some extent. Did you feel that the sort of common person was missing from this story, though, that we didn't really see?
You didn't see the regular people.
You see the mob scene. It's hard for me to picture the moment where it's like, okay, so I'm down at the game and then something crazy happens at the game. There's an explosion. The whole team gets sucked into the earth. This guy comes out and says, you're all going to blow up in a few months. At what point do I go beating the shit out of people in fur coats just because it's fun? Right. You know, I don't know where I felt like that. Maybe that perspective was.
Yeah,
was they showed no bystanders. Yeah. Like it was like every once in a while they'd show a person like, oh, God.
Yeah, right.
That was it. That was really it. They showed nobody for longer than 5 seconds.
Yeah.
But I guess one of the bigger ideas that had never been seen in the first two was you saw the only way that Bane could have been conquered is if the people that Batman and Bruce Wayne had helped for so long, assisted him. Mm-hmm. And that's really cool. That's a really cool idea because he had never really seen that sort of reaction from people. Every once in a while, you'd see somebody say, oh, thank you, Batman. You know, when he would help somebody or help a little kid or punch somebody in the face. Like, but you had never seen the scale, the I guess the effect that he had on people and how it kind of reaped some benefits towards the end when he needed them. And that was no way that Bruce Wayne or Batman could have outsmarted Bane or beat him physically. Because mm-hmm. every scene was brutal. He was beating the shit out of him, smashing him every time. And part of that had to do with a bigger idea that, and Bane said it a lot, like he, Bruce Wayne kind of functioned in the shadows, whereas Bane lived in the shadows. He was that dark character that Batman had tried to imitate his whole life, like mm-hmm. to become a daunting force in society. He was that. Bane was that person, as opposed to Bruce Wayne kind of getting the tools through Ra's al Ghul and through just practicing.
Billions of dollars.
Right, his billions of dollars. Bane was that person. And that's what made him so much more brutal, so much more unrelenting, because his value to him was like almost nothing. He appreciated what Batman did, but he didn't care. Mm-hmm. He didn't care about him in any way, shape, or form. Joker cared about him. In a way, like he wanted him to stay alive so he can see this. And Bane wanted him to stay alive to see this, but he was going to kill him, mm-hmm. period. It wasn't like he was going to like keep him alive forever. Yeah. Joker wanted him to stay alive.
Like Joker was kind of like entertained by him.
Right. He was his yin to his yang, and he loved that. Yeah.
Yeah. They kept him interested.
Right. Right. There was this. So I read this really cool comic, and parts of the Killing Joker kind of the Killing Joker is a really good comic about mm-hmm. Batman and the Joker. And it was the first time that Joker really expressed
that kind of duality.
What drove him, what drove him to be the way he was around Batman. He basically was saying, you are me, and I'm you, and you are the best thing that ever happened to me. You forced me to be the best version of myself.
Yeah, I think that comic was like the first one that really sort of, because that was for my time.
Right.
and I remember it was one of the first ones that took that whole two sides of the same coin kind of relationship and set that up, that idea that, you know, that they kind of need each other in some kind of twisted way.
Bane did not feel like that. He felt like he was soft. He was going to destroy him.
Right.
This was not the same sort of relationship. And that's what I loved about it.
Mm-hmm. Well, so what about the strange, okay, if we are to look at the, you know, if we see this as the haves versus the have-nots,
mm-hmm.
doesn't the movie sort of say that the haves really are the ones we need to leave in control?
Yeah, I think. Well,
isn't it kind of strange that there's sort of like the sort of peasant uprising is led by a vicious murderer? And I've heard some people use the word fascist or fascistic to describe sort of the idea that the privileged people and the authorities are the ones who kind of have to save the day in this. And I don't really have a problem with it in the terms of a story, but in the way the movie makes you think about current events and everything that's going on in the world, it's a little strange in the midst of, you know, Occupy movement and everything like that to say, hey, what if the Occupy movement were, now just bear with me, a bunch of murderous terrorists.
right.
Like, is that, I don't know. I mean, I think that that's one of the few things, it's hard to say whether it falls apart at that point, because I don't think we're meant to see it as our world.
Right.
But I do think that, like, it makes you think about, you know, it's clearly Christopher Nolan knew that he was putting something in there that was going to make you relate these things.
Yeah.
So in a weird way, I wonder if that's in, you know, like, we don't really see why these rich people in Gotham necessarily deserve to be dragged out into the streets, but we can sort of imagine, like you were saying before, what the tension has been like over these last 8 years.
The motivations.
Who's been served by the current system and who's being kind of forgotten. But I don't know if the movie quite, like,
it's almost like a voice.
It's almost like it would be better not to make you think of those things than it is to bring it up and kind of like, oh, but by the way, in this one, the people that are rising up are the assholes.
It was interesting because it... And that's the cool part about the way Bane presented this uprising. It was packaged as this revolution that was going to benefit everybody. Mm-hmm. But he kind of knew that the element that he wanted to destroy society would destroy society, because there's a relentlessness about
the whole concept of relenting.
Because it's because I think there
don't
was
relent,
a limit.
Ronald, make your point.
Yeah, because there was a because what would happen a lot of the times was like even with a lot of the villains, they would stop. They would like, okay, I can't let you do this. I'm going to do this and stop. He didn't want to do that.
Yeah,
he wanted everything to be destroyed. He didn't want there to be any remnants of old Gotham society to exist. And he knew that when he created chaos, that the people that wanted that to happen would assist him. But he packaged it as if it were this revolutionary thing that had to happen for everybody. It was this duality to the chaos that I think was genius. And it's kind of the idea of knowing how stupid people can get when chaos ensues. And that's why we kind of need leadership. We need some parameters to help us. Not that those people are good.
Right.
So much as the idea.
I guess it's almost just like, it's like you're not really supposed to feel 100% okay with it either. You're supposed to sort of go, well, I don't know what the answer is. I mean, I do think that the movie shows you that there are good people working on the inside, that you should trust authority only because of there's a guy like, you know, Commissioner Gordon, or
right,
a guy like Bruce, John Blake. Yeah. It's like you're supposed to see these little glimmering lights, that these are the people that kind of redeem what the system is trying to do.
Yeah.
Because I do think they go out of their way to show how, you know, generally the police force has gotten kind of lazy.
Yeah. Yeah, there's no perfection there, but there are pieces that work and there are pieces that will continue to push the vision forward.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, I think what you said, John, about how, you know, you have the extremes of like the bad guys, the terrorists, is like, you know, you see it as the lowest end of this dichotomy that we have in this Gotham world. And the people that are on the good side are, you know, the police, the, you know, Bruce Wayne, Batman, the billionaire, you know, that no one knows is Bruce Wayne. But
the guys who we here in the real world think are the assholes.
Right.
Right. You know, so it's kind of interesting that that middle section, which is the majority of those people, you know, you don't hear a lot about. But I think that happens. I mean, I think that's pretty in some ways accurate in this world, too. Yeah. I mean, that middle section, that's the majority a lot of times. They don't, you know, you don't hear from them a lot.
The movie didn't show you all the people that just stayed at home and tried to keep their family.
Exactly.
Yeah, they didn't want to get their brains smashed in by.
Exactly. They kind of played it safe. They played it, you know.
Did you catch that the doorman at the hotel? There's the scene where you see the people getting going into out. There's a doorman and you think, okay, he's part, is he have or have not? I don't know.
Yeah.
If you see, you know, the doorman is dragging someone out and beating him down.
Yeah.
So that doorman is taking out.
I thought that was really cool.
I thought that was kind of funny that it was just like, okay, you know, it's hard to say where the doorman fits in. Is he part of, is he part of fancy society or is he going to, oh no, he's going to,
that's cool.
I didn't know. Yeah. That's.
So I thought the whole, the court scenes were pretty,
interesting. Oh, yeah. They were so cool.
Yeah.
And it was great the way that Nolan, like, this is one of the things he's done right, I think, for sure, is let the world kind of breathe. And one of, like, the fact that Scarecrow has been in each of the movies
consistently
and not done away with and not treated like a real threat, but just like, I mean, that's another thing that feels sort of true to the sort of the serialized stories, is that you have characters that survive and they're just out there.
Yeah, they just exist down that world.
Yeah.
And of course, he would, you know, if this was going on in Gotham, of course, that character would be
involved
in
somehow.
So do you think we would have seen some Joker in this movie if Heath Ledger hadn't died?
I hope.
Wow. I've been thinking about that ever since I saw the movie.
I honestly think, it doesn't sound kind
of, you know, it's silly because it's total speculation, but it does seem like you leave that character alive so that he can come back somehow. But who knows?
I would have loved a computer-generated Joker.
What?
Listen to what
you and your Tupac hologram.
Tupac hologram.
What's wrong with you?
on the stack at the during the jury, the trial thing, and it would have
happened. Man, that's stupid.
No, it would have been great.
Who knows? Maybe he would have been. Maybe they would have done that. Because I know he said that after Heath Ledger died, he wasn't going to touch it.
They didn't even mention him.
Yeah, that was very strange.
That's what more so got me. I mean, I guess maybe not necessarily having to have him in the film, whether it's computer animated or if, you know, if he was still with us. But, you know, I think at least
we could have recast Channing Tatum or something like that.
He's hot right now. He's
right,
hot.
Right.
Yeah, right.
You know, I don't know. I think at least, I mean, I can respect it, obviously. I mean, it's their decision and it's totally admirable. But I think just the acknowledgement of what Joker, of what came of Joker 8 years later, especially because we talked about that 8-year gap.
Yeah.
You know, that's a huge, and the Dent Act coming into play and so many people being locked up, you know, in the prison. I would have liked to just have it acknowledged, like, what came of the Joker or, you know, when this all happens. Even if you don't see him on the screen, like, just to have a reference to him.
Right. They could have mentioned that he was Arkham Asylum.
Is worse than that last guy.
Right.
Yeah. Look at the camera. Slow wink.
Right.
we all would know.
My I was talking to Taylor, a friend Taylor. He said that Michael
Pitt. Just name drop him.
Michael Pitt could have been a good Joker from Boardwalk Empire.
I feel like if you say that, you could have just had Leo DiCaprio do it and had this massive inception. Oh, come on.
No, I briefly had this.
He looks like Leo DiCaprio.
Really?
Michael Pitt? Oh, my God, man. Yeah. Boardwalk Empire guy?
Really? You think he looks like?
Oh, my God. Yeah, dude. Watch like Titanic or any old Leo DiCaprio especially.
Titanic is all I like.
Titanic?
Titanic.
Titanic?
Yeah.
I don't know, whatever, but...
I'm going to look that up, Michael Pitt.
I don't agree with you that they should have done a hologram, and I don't agree with you that those two actors look alike, but I'm not... I don't think we don't need to settle this right now.
Yeah, I say we just arm wrestle. Yeah.
They should have had Joker hologram.
Yeah. I wish you could see Ronald's movement that he just made.
Moving like a robot.
Doing a weird robot movie. That's not very robotic at all. No.
It is reminiscent of the Tupac hologram.
This awkward...
Were you watching
rapper
the video
gestures?
Again?
I was, man. I watched Tupac hologram the other day.
I don't know. I don't think it's needed. I mean, back to the original question. Yeah. I don't think it's needed. I think that this world exists. And I think, oddly enough, as amazing as Joker was, and I mean, I don't know that... I mean, I like Bane, but I would still maintain that I think Joker is hands down one of my favorite villains in probably any movie.
Yeah.
I had a conversation the other day with a friend, like, you know, talking about villains and Hannibal Lecter, like, just monumental villain characters in film. And I think Joker, Heath Ledger's Joker is up there for me.
Oh, yeah.
You know, and I just think that a piece that a lot of people forget about from Dark Knight that is what carries over is Harvey Dent.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I think that was really the pivot point in Dark Knight that allows Christopher Nolan to really, you know, find a way to, I guess, come up with an idea for Dark Knight Rises that he and his brother and David S. Goyer, you know, were satisfied with to close the series. Because... that's the jumping point, you know, sacrifice, that's the change in the way Gotham looks or feels or the way it at least appears, and obviously not all as well, but I mean, the Joker, for all he did in Dark Knight and all the problem he caused and all the trouble he, you know, the mayhem he caused, it was really, you know, he who drove Harvey to do what he did, to turn it into Two-Face and to do those acts, but it was Harvey that did them, and it was Batman that, you know.
Yeah, you're right. He was a huge part of Gotham. He was a staple. He was a politician.
Right.
That
and immediately changed, in this film, you know, right when we break from Bane's opening scene, immediately you see Harvey Dent, you know.
Yeah.
And I think that's cool. You know, I thought
yeah,
if
that's
not
the first
mentioned,
thing they really remind you of
exactly.
is that lie from the end of the last movie.
Exactly. And that brings me right back to, you know, even though there's 8 years, I think the fact that they're having this reunion or like this memorial for him 8 years later, I think it's cool that like that's what like you just said, it ties me right back into where Dark Knight ended, and you know, I remember that sacrifice and I remember what happened, and then you kind of let me jump into this new 8 years later Gotham. And I mean, that's the piece. If even without the Joker, you know, that's what we're talking about, obviously, but as a character, it would have been cool to reference it. But as a plot point or a plot device, I think that Two-Face was the more important.
No, you're right.
Piece, I mean, to have. In
yeah, yeah, absolutely.
That was the bigger link.
Yeah, exactly.
Story.
Definitely. I mean, it tied it together really well.
Wait, we were talking about she.
She Miranda?
She is a she.
She is a she. We know that.
We've discussed. I think that's what got us off. That's what got us off on this.
Come to find out.
We got side boobed.
I mean, we're gonna spoil the shit out of this movie. Ra's al Ghul's daughter. And she was. Natalia. Talia? It was just Talia?
Yeah.
For some reason, I thought it was Natalia. Whatever.
Some girl you probably know.
Right, right. She was the force behind this whole plan. That was a little strange to me. I mean, that's what we were kind of talking about
and
earlier.
And she/Talia is Miranda Tate, in case that was unclear.
Miranda
I just
Tate,
wanted to make sure I drove that
who
spoiler
is,
in.
Who was working with Wayne Enterprises to come up with a new form of...
Now, she talked about someone with a long plan.
Right, oh, the long con. Did we talk about that?
This whole new identity, I'm going to establish myself as a leader in like green, you know,
clean
earth-friendy
energy
clean energy.
Then the big gotcha bitch at the
wait
end.
Your time.
Right.
Wait for your moment.
She waited a very long time.
Get on the board.
Right.
Stay patient. Pretty stay, soon.
Right. As her...
Bane's out here. He's give the bomb a few months.
That took... I mean, that was weird. The bomb taking so long.
I guess... You, yeah. I mean, they do explain why, but it does seem like...
Yeah.
It is hard. That's one of those things that I was mentioning before, that if you look back on it too much, it was like, exactly what was her plan? Was the intention always for her to reveal herself in that way? You don't really know. I think that there were a lot of references in this, almost more so to Batman Begins.
Yeah, yeah. The League of Shadows and all that stuff. They explain it stuff. I guess that's the part of the big reveal, like when Batman is starting to gain on Bane. He's like...
He has him.
He has him. He's like, oh, I'm ready. Bane's like... making all these weird sounds. Making all these weird sounds. And then Talia. Big reveal. Bitch, I've been here all along. I got you. And then it's weird because I thought that... Well, that was kind of a nod to... The Venom, I was going to say, someone asked...
my favorite part was when she said, bitch.
Yeah.
It's kind of out of character. It was really cool.
It was really cool. But someone asked about Bane's mask, and it was kind of a nod. I mean, it helps him with pain management, mm-hmm. just like the Venom did. And it was handled in a different way, but I thought it was a cool nod to Bane's original origin in the comic books. But...
Back to she. I love how we keep getting off topic.
Back to she.
She's the love interest.
Yeah,
she's exactly. Movie, but she's kind of one of those love interests that's sort of peripheral to the story.
Like, exactly.
If you were watching this movie, normally you would probably be complaining when you walked out, why was there that extra sort of love interest character?
Right. Yeah.
You know, and then when you find out why she's in it, it makes a little more sense. But I also think more interesting is just the choice that Catwoman's not the love interest for the majority of the movie. And
I
could see where people would not be wondering, why is this character here? But still, she sort of stands out. And then when she finally reveals that she's the daughter of you know, his mentor.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's sort of like, I think that, you know, that could either feel like pieces sliding into place or one twist too many at the end of the movie.
What do you think about the random Catwoman kiss with Batman? Right when the action started to pick up towards the end.
I didn't feel like that was random. I felt like Miranda Tate having sex with Batman was random.
Yeah, that was pretty random.
That was random.
I mean, I had issue with that. Like, you were just talking about, like, the love interest. You kind of picked up that, like, you know, Alfred or Lucius was, like, trying to set Bruce Wayne up with her throughout mm-hmm. pieces of the film. You know, she'd been on the board. You know, she had, you know, a reputation with this clean energy, which over time had lost them money.
Yeah.
You know, had done no good except for the fact that, you know, Bruce and Lucius actually had a working
piece. Yeah,
so
not only
piece.
Is the movie anti peasant uprising, it's also anti
clean energy. Clean
energy.
What the hell really? This movie?
Right.
Yeah, right.
Gosh. So he just gave up on it. He's like, I'm clean energy.
So, I mean, I had issue with that because that was random as all hell to me. I mean, that was one of my.
It was weird.
Hands, I mean, just to put it on the table, I love the movie. I mean, I know we're kind of picking it, you know, at it here and there. I genuinely did love it. I need to see it again to say where I feel it is. But that's my biggest issue with the movie, was that one scene. I felt like it was so random. And, you know, and then when you get the reveal at the end of who she really is, I mean, you start saying, okay, was that just so that she could have that piece of Bruce as well? Because mm-hmm. she knew that he was Batman.
Yeah.
And then you say, oh, well, how did she find out he was Batman?
Right.
You know, that Bruce Wayne was Batman. I mean, that's where you start to piece together, like, did she know these things that her father found an opportunity to tell her sometime during mm-hmm. Batman Begins? And you start thinking of all these little things in terms of plot holes, possibly, that, you know, how did Bane know he was Batman, that Bruce Wayne was Batman? How did Bane know about the Applied Sciences Division? You know, things that she probably, you assume, or at least I assume, was able to pick apart internally by being on that board for 8 years or however long she was.
Yeah.
But that romance between them was very underdeveloped and I thought was pointless to me. I mean, if anything, at the end, when she makes the reveal, I feel like that scene had nothing to do with it. You know,
that was a weird scene. Cause you gotta remember, it was the big reveal. Oh, we're having sex. We're dating. And then she's explaining the story. And then he's crying.
Talking about Bane?
Bane is just sitting down crying at this point. Like, that's a little weird to me. That was weird.
Why?
It was weird.
But I'm saying why.
Why? Because it just felt out of place, man.
I disagree with that entirely.
It felt very out of place.
You need to also think about it. Like, this is something that they've made a life... I mean, if you really get into this character, this is a life commitment. And he's there for this big reveal of what they actually are going to take, you know, basically carry through and destroy this world. And finally fulfill, you know, the League of Shadows or Ra's al Ghul's, like, plan. You know, that he was unable to, in Batman Begins, but that they have continued to, even with him being a mercenary and you know, he was kicked out. I think he is completely, like you said, he is that hell piece. He is the darkness. He's committed to this horrible plan. And hearing her say that, I feel like is revelation or a realization to him that it's about to happen, that they got Batman. Like, she stabs him and, you know, is Bruce Wayne slash Batman going to die? And this plan is actually going to happen now.
So he's crying about that?
I think he's crying. I think it's an emotional moment for that character because he's.
You know, in the moment, it played to me almost like it was there just to show us his emotional attachment to her.
Yeah.
But I didn't even think about it before that it's a strange thing for him to suddenly start crying in that moment.
You have to remember.
But I do think it's there to show you just that he's. Like, hearing her talk about their history together kind of touches
him. Yeah, it touched him. It touched him, yeah.
That's kind of how I took it.
Well, I guess that's the one thing.
But as far as, like, why would Bane suddenly, like, as though he didn't know? I guess, that's a little bit of moviness for you.
Right.
Just to say, well, you know, if she's going to say this, and we're going to see this attachment here.
They haven't had this conversation before, like, about his contribution to her life.
But maybe it's
no, they may have, but we haven't.
Yeah.
We heard it. That's the first, the entire film,
it still didn't.
We're led down a path of this child that escaped, and we assume it was Bane. You know, we find out that it's,
I got to tell you something. It still doesn't make any sense to me.
Okay. Fair enough.
It was cool. I mean, I think that was cool that it showed, like, some human element, because he was like a monster up until that point.
The fact that he helped the child escape is a pretty human act.
Absolutely.
So I don't think, I mean, he's a monster, but there are things that he's doing there's things that he believes in. And I mean, that's something, obviously, this whole plan, but I mean, he helped the kid. He saved the kid when he was in there, you know, he sacrificed himself and then they came back to get him, you know, I don't know. I thought it was kind of cool. Let's get over to a general idea, like, just to kind of wrap this in.
Right.
If we could talk all night about this, but I mean, where do you see this film fitting in the trilogy? You know, I feel like Batman Begins comes out in 2005. 3 years later, we have Dark Knight. 4 years later, we have Dark Knight Rises.
Okay.
You know, we have a world that Christopher Nolan creates, and for the hugely successful, I mean, overall, hugely well received by critics and, you know, moviegoers, you know,
taken seriously in a way that this type of movie is not usually.
Yeah, not in a long time has it been.
I don't know. I don't know if that's fair to all the. I mean, there's a lot of people. You probably heard all about, like, Rotten Tomatoes message boards getting shut down and stuff. There's a lot of people that were ready to just love this movie before it ever came out.
Which is a built-in bias.
Yeah, there's a lot of people that just would not settle for anything less than the notion that this movie is going to be, like, the greatest movie of all time. I think, however you look at it, though, it's a trilogy of really well-made movies that
definitely
did probably like make it a little bit less toxic to some people, the thought of going and you know, going to see a superhero movie. But ironically, at the end of this movie, I mean, even as someone who likes superhero movies, I don't need to see one for a long time. After the Avengers and this, there's been a lot of huge, you know, maybe it's nice to take a year off, watch some movies about, you know, people having regular problems.
Right. I'm glad that it was a very good wrap up. Mm-hmm. I think that it was handled in a way that was respectful to everything before it.
And in a way that these types of movies maybe aren't usually allowed to be, like a complete story. Like, here's a character that gets redone every few years, and this actually felt like, okay, we know we tried to wrap it up.
But aside from, like, First Class, this is the only superhero movie, I mean, and maybe Watchmen, where I felt like, man, these people are acting their asses off. Acting, real acting.
Yeah.
It felt good. Like, I think that's one of the bigger things. On top of the action, on top of the great story, the acting in this trilogy. Fuck.
So where does it fall?
Where does, like, this one fall in the trilogy?
In terms of the trilogy, I'd say...
Give me them in order. Dark, as of right now.
Okay, favorite to least favorite.
Yep.
Dark Knight, Dark Knight Rises, Batman Begins.
Probably Dark Knight, just because I think that as good as these other movies have been, no one has nailed a performance. I mean, Heath Ledger as the Joker is one of those. Everyone's going to be talking about that for years.
Yeah.
And the other thing is just, whereas before what I was saying about Catwoman, like, I think Anne Hathaway was good in the movie. I don't know that she defined Catwoman for me.
Yeah, I know what you mean.
the way that Heath Ledger kind of defined the Joker. So I would say Dark Knight's probably the best. Then Batman Forever.
I wish we were cross-populating here.
And then actually, I'm going to go back to the top, Batman and Robin. That's the best one that they've done.
Best Very one. Inspired choices.
Yeah,
right. I really want to see, I need to see this again. I think I'm going to go later this week.
So,
but as of now, I would agree, Dark Knight. I mean, just because of the performance, you know? And I think, and the fact that, you know, you have the idea that the type of stage that it's set for this film, you know, that's just, I mean, even though this film taps more into Batman Begins, you know, I think it sets the society on the course that allows Bane or, you know, this world to want to do what they want to do. But I don't know. It's very close for me. Like, I really did enjoy this movie a lot. I thought the IMAX experience, I know you weren't able to see it on IMAX, John.
Yeah, me either.
I saw it on IMAX, and I mean,
I was mad at first. But within 15 minutes, I was like, this looks pretty damn good. I mean, the stuff that was shot in IMAX still looked fantastic.
Oh, yeah. Let's take over an hour of the film. I mean, it's awesome. I mean, I love IMAX. I'm not a huge 3D guy.
Yeah.
But I mean,
I think IMAX makes a bigger difference than 3D.
Absolutely. I mean, if there's a movie that I want to see and it's in IMAX, I'll usually see it in IMAX.
Yeah.
I mean, ticket price is a little more expensive, but I mean, I think the stuff in IMAX looked amazing in this movie. And without really honestly being able to say what hour and change of the movie was in IMAX, overall, it looks incredible. The sound mixing, you know, the score.
Yeah.
I mean, that we didn't even touch on that. The score, I mean, the music of this Hans film Zimmer. I thought it's incredible.
Yeah.
I want to get that chant out of the prison when I want to get that as my my alarm clock in the morning. It means rise. So
right,
you know, it makes sense, right? But yeah, I don't know. The music was amazing. One last question for you guys before some final thoughts. Spinoffs.
Yeah, I was going to say, where do you see them going from here?
Because, we didn't even really directly say John Blake's character is basically Robin.
Yeah, we were kind of all over the road on this. But I think
we
kind of
missed that.
Yeah, Joseph Gordon-Levitt plays a character who is set up to be the logical successor to Batman in some way, whether he's going to become Robin or he's going to be a new Batman.
A new Batman.
Right. I prefer to picture him being Batman than Robin. I think the name, I mean, you know, that little nod to Robin at the end with just his name being Robin, I think that was more there, again, just for fans to kind of enjoy that. But in the end, the notion of them, I mean, do you think, well, supposedly Nolan, I've heard conflicting reports that whether he's done or whether he's going to be producing whatever the next Batman movie is. But
trilogy's done.
Right. I think he's done. I read somewhere where he said he was done. So assuming he's done, does somebody else pick up in this world?
Who can
do that? Because, I mean, it's almost a shame to let some of those,
actors
go.
I mean,
who are you going to cast as Commissioner Gordon now?
Who's going to write it?
Yeah.
And also the fact that in this world, even though they did finish it, they still left, final spoiler, they still leave Batman alive at the end. Like, even though you're sort of led to believe maybe he might die in this, in the end, he's definitely still around, which it's not like I wanted to see Batman die, but some part of me was like going, I can't believe, like, I was starting to really admire the balls of blowing up Batman at the end of this movie. And then when it turned out he survived, it was, I won't say a disappointment, because it's not like I'm sitting there craving blood, but it did make me go, oh, okay, this is a little bit more like what you might have pictured. It was pretty much an unexpectedly happy ending.
Yeah. And it was done in a way that wasn't so corny.
I mean, it was just, you don't expect Christopher Nolan in a Batman movie to have a sort of you're trying to look for the bad in the ending. You're like, wait, no, everybody got to ride off into the sunset. And
I think the exchange with that is because he had been brutalized for so long, they were like, we gotta have some happiness in
the
end.
Take it easy on this guy.
He got his face pounded in. Yeah. So
they broke his mask.
What is that scene? Mm.
Yeah,
so good.
I mean,
so
I have to say,
you could see it crumbling.
I thought some of the fight choreography was a little, like, there were some scenes where they were fighting on the steps where I felt like maybe I was seeing a little too much of two guys wearing heavy costumes, like, move a little too slow with each other. But that scene, the fight scene in the middle was pretty brutal. Like, I don't care who you are, when he drops Batman over his knee, you're going to go
just like the comic book.
Can
that
they
was
do that
weird.
To Batman?
Right.
Yeah, I mean, that scene was awesome. I mean, that's where I felt a change in as a fan and like an uber fan of the movies. Like, I'm a dork about the movies. Like, seriously, you know, the moment that Bane is just like pummeling him and like lifts him off the ground and Batman has nothing.
He can't do anything.
Yeah. Like, I was like, holy shit, this movie is going to get dark.
Yeah, it was
because on top of him being beaten, you see him sort of his confidence.
He goes in there just sure, tapers really quickly. He just starts groaning. The part where he just starts, he's like, it's just like, what is he doing? That was weird.
He's desperate.
And then what would happen too is like, I don't know if you noticed the sound elements, like music started. Then when he fought him, like it got really quiet and really dark. And all you can hear were them. And when he was talking to him in the dark.
It was just
something about that was just.
I don't know how I feel about, I mean, back to the spin-off. I don't know. Like I've been thinking about a lot of.
Should they just leave it alone? Because it almost seems like this ending, as much as it does suggest another story, it's also. I like those endings that sort of say this world's going to keep going. You just don't get to see it. Like, you know what I mean?
I agree. I think that's my final thought on it. What you just said, like I've read it, like Anne Hathaway is all over the news talking about a Catwoman spinoff and everybody's talking about a Robin/Batman, whatever with Joseph Gordon. I'd almost rather, you know, being so satisfied with it and not seeing it go down a saturated path, you know, where it's just like tapping into this because it was so good.
Yeah.
I'd like to just say, like you just said, you know, it just exists still.
Yeah.
You know, it's going on in some way.
I like when things end.
That feeling of how fun it is nice.
But the problem is though, it kind of set the standard for the way comic book movies should be made. And because of that, there's going to be another series.
Andrew Garfield as Batman.
Andrew Garfield. Man, I would be so pissed if he did that.
We shall see if anybody's able to replicate.
I think Sorkin should write a
superhero film. That'd be sick.
Oh, man.
I'd be down with that.
It'd be too fast-paced, though.
Dialogue.
It'd be very fast-paced.
I'm sure we'd probably be able to understand it a little better than you just...
Right.
Maybe, I don't know. I could be wrong.
What would be your voice, Ronald, if you were a superhero? If this was... Yeah, if this was Gotham and you don't want people to know about it.
I know who it would be.
What?
It would be you being David Keith, being a superhero.
People coming. We'll cut somebody up. Motherfuckers are coming with guns. I gotta be careful.
Oh, man. Damn it. Love that movie. Now you can do your real one. I just wanted to hear you talk about David Keith.
Hey, everyone. This is John interrupting the podcast to make a correction. Remember earlier when Ronald said,
I mean this in the most respectful way possible. We're smarter than you listeners. And we're just lending our knowledge to you.
Well, that was before everyone made the mistake of referring to beloved character actor Keith David as David Keith. You may know Keith David from such classics as John Carpenter's The Thing and John Carpenter's They Live, and probably some other classic directed by John Carpenter. Now, back to the fun.
His voice is incredible to me. Like he sounds so sleazy.
You're kind of lucky though. You're in that pot. You know, it's like everyone. But based on what your voice is, there's impressions you can do.
Yeah. Any reason I can find to bring that voice up on this podcast, I will always. Do
That's going to know my.
I can't even attempt to follow that up. So don't even ask me the same question. All right. I'll just say the same thing. You just
All right.
Cool. Well, I think pretty good to go with this. I like to also just on a side note, thank you for letting me use your Return of the Jedi Burger King cup.
It's heirloom quality.
It's very, very, it's an act of trust. It's almost as old as I am.
Yeah.
And I have the same set. So,
you know,
I wouldn't really let anybody, I wouldn't even let Ronald use this. Right. So I appreciate this. That's why I knew we made the right
and
choice.
I'm his personal shaman. Like, I don't even understand that.
So, I mean, that's going to wrap it up for the issue or this episode, rather.
Right.
This issue, that's appropriate. This issue,
yeah. We'll go back to the comic books.
Thank you so much for coming on, John.
Movie Schmovie. Sure.
My pleasure.
iTunes, resubscribe. Thank you, John, for coming on.
From the ashes we rise. Volume 39. I'm so sorry. I had to say that again.
How would David Keith say it?
Yo.
I'd have to think about it. It has to be a whole sentence.
Yeah. You just think about that. Okay. And we'll start the next podcast with that lead in.
Yeah. Right.
You'll introduce it.
Right. Every time I think about him, I think, double dildo. Double-sided dildo.
Is that from
Requiem for a Dream?
Yeah.
Oh, God.
All right.
No.
Way to end the podcast. Double-sided dildo.
Note to end on.
Thank you, Ronald. Thanks, guys, for listening so much. MovieSchmovie.net. As always, you can find us there. And as always, thank you for listening.
Thank you.
Made our day. Take care.